Hello everyone, I hope you're doing great today. Sorry if my voice is a bit funny at the moment. My throat's gone a bit weird recently. I'm completely fine, it's just you know when it happens, so sorry if my voice is somewhat different. Make sure you check out my Patreon if you want early access to my videos and my podcast in the description below. I have a quick message before the video starts, so if you'd like to go straight to them, then there's timestamps in the description. So for today, I'd like to share this. I think something people often overlook, regardless of what they're doing, is becoming burnt out. And it's something that can actually be quite detrimental to your mental health and kind of makes your natural mental barriers come down a bit. And this can make us more susceptible to negative emotions and feelings and thinking patterns, I believe. I think it's really important to try and just pick up on the signs of it. Because, of course, you don't want to get to the point where you're really down and in a bad way. So, a good way to prevent it is to try and pick up on when you're a bit burnt out. And some of the signs I've realized is that you might not really feel as interested in doing things, and everything might become a challenge, even if it's the smallest little things. And this could just be natural from having a worse day if you're susceptible to depression or things like that, or naturally more anxious. But if you find it persists and that you really have no motivation for things and don't really enjoy things, then it might be a sign that you're becoming burnt out. So make sure you schedule some days off where you can just rest and relax and enjoy yourself and just do the things that you want to do and not have to worry about other things. It's something that's very important, I think, to have the balance in your life, and I think people don't appreciate the importance of having actual dedicated rest days. Even just time off from training or things like that, I think can be really important, and you truly do need that balance in order to be the best in life. And remember, it's important just to enjoy life and the things that you like, but not push yourself too hard all the time. So I hope that can make a difference for someone, and I hope you enjoyed these stories. Take care, I'll speak to you all soon. I'm a park ranger during the daytime, but in my off times, I'm an avid hunter and love to go exploring and camping. I was on one particular trip in Alaska that was like no other. I'd gone to one particular area that I love to go fishing in a number of times, and I was planning on spending the week up in an isolated cabin. Now, to get to the cabin, you actually had to walk or really trek for miles and miles in snowshoes. During such, it was quite bright during the day and could actually get quite hot, so I had to wear some sunglasses just to stop my eyes burning from the light reflecting. I also brought lots of water because I'd get lots of headaches otherwise. Anyway, the first couple of days on the trip go perfectly normal, and I'm having a great time there. Now, when I set in for the third night, I'm awoken by a loud knocking on the door. I think this is really odd because literally no one's out here. Now, I know something's wrong and I go to investigate. I can see quite clearly out of the windows and I don't see anyone at all. Strangely, this made me feel very calm and a little bit slow, if that makes sense. Kind of reminded me of how far away I am from everyone else. I don't think much of it and decide that I need to go back to bed. I do so, and all is normal. I'm now coming into the fourth night. I'm heading back from another fishing trip, and I feel pretty calm and relaxed. I'm actually very peaceful at this particular moment and happy to be going back and starting my meal. I'm going to be eating one of the fish that I've captured, and I think this is really cool. As I'm doing so, I can hear a loud knock on the door once again. Confused, I go out and grab my knife and go to open the door. I open the door and find no one. But just off, over in the horizon, I can see a tall figure standing there looming. It's very shadowy and hard to see because some snow's picked up, but this is weird. I shout out, "Hey, do you need help?" And the only way I can describe this is that it seemingly melts into the floor. Not like it walks off, it just seems to slowly go down to where I can't see it. I call out to this person again or whatever it is, and again get no reply. The silence becomes deafening, and I'm struck with fear now. Then something else is odd. I can't really see any tracks around. I decide to close the door and quickly go out to try and help in case somebody's lost. I realise that it's not likely and improbable, but I guess that's from being a ranger that makes you want to go and investigate and try and help. I head over quickly to the exact spot where this person appeared to be, but I can't find anything. Surely the isolation has really started to get to me. I decide the best thing I can do now is just head back and try and think of home. Now, I've really struggled to fall asleep at night and I've truly tried my best, but something just felt completely off about this encounter. Now, in the early hours of the fifth day, I'm woken up again by a strange knocking. I'm actually pretty irritated and I grab the knife and repeat the procedure. Just as I'm one step from opening the door handle, I hear knocking again on the opposite side of the cabin. Now, I know I'm alone out here and nobody should be around me, and I can feel the muscles becoming tight on my back, like my body's getting prepared for something to come and attack me. I can actually feel my blood pulsating a little bit, which isn't a nice feeling, and it travels up to the top of my neck and my arms. You know when you just get into a heightened state, almost like you know something's there and you're trying your best to stay calm? I then go to investigate the other side of the cabin, and I can't get rid of this strange warm feeling on my body. I go to shout but quickly stop myself, realizing silence is the best thing now and I really need to be observant to figure out what the heck is going on. And immediately it stops. I then hear it from the other side of the cabin and realize something's wrong. Suddenly the wind's picked up and there's knocking on all sides of the cabin. It sounded like lots of people throwing hard cups at the sides of the cabin constantly, and I almost feel like the whole thing's gonna come down. I go back and sit in the middle of the bed with the knife drawn, not knowing what to do. I can just about see out the windows and no one's there. I ended up covering my ears, closing my eyes, waiting for it to stop. And suddenly it does, almost like I've willed us away. I become very angry suddenly and don't want to be scared and quickly throw the door open and scream, "Hey, whoever's there needs to stop." I rush outside with the knife, ready to have a big fight to the death with God knows what, but there's nothing there. I quickly sprint to one side of the cabin and I find nothing. I then trace my steps and run in a circle and I can't find anything. I then look up expecting to see some kind of rock or at least snow in the ground from where somebody's threw stuff like ice or whatever at the cabin, but there's nothing. Then I can see it. There's tracks leading up to the front of the cabin. Yes, I've got them. I'm very angry and with the adrenaline surging in my body, I sprint towards the tracks, running in the direction that I saw the figure yesterday. I follow these for a good minute until suddenly, they stop. The steps completely vanish out of nowhere. I look to the left and right and can't see any tracks whatsoever. I then look around and I can't find anyone. This is very bizarre because I know for a fact that I should have encountered somebody by now. Even if it's just an animal, there should be something, but there's nothing. I start to grow more and more irritated until I take a closer inspection of the tracks. They kind of look almost too big to be a person's, but clearly not a bear because there's not any paw prints. I take a while to try and figure out what these are, but I really can't. They're basically large masses in the snow with kind of points at the end, but clearly it's not a hoof, but God knows what it is. I've realised now that I should really cut the trip short, but I don't have a choice other than to go and sleep for a bit, then continue in the morning home. And I don't want to get a reputation for being somebody who's scared of things that might not even be there. So I sprint back into the cabin, I barricade the door and bedroom and fall asleep again. I wake up in the morning and everything seems to be normal. And for the first few minutes, I actually forget about what's happened and I go about my way. It's only when I pack up and start heading out that I realize what happened was really bizarre. I have everything together and I can't see the tracks from before now because more snow is set, only my own new ones. I go to take a look at the cabin and I can just about make out a figure again, this time just off to the side of the cabin, just like before. Just before fear sets in, I noticed another one to the side of it, then one other just to the right and in the far distance, almost forming a circle around the cabin. I realize something's very off and I grip my knife very tightly. I sprint hike basically the whole way back to where my truck is, and I then start the long drive back home. Even in this very moment now, where I'm writing out my experience for you all, I still don't know what happened that day. It did put me off doing any kind of hiking or exploring or going out to cabins, though I have since returned to camping trips with groups of friends, but I've never went out alone again, and I don't think I ever will. I'm certainly never going back to that cabin. My mum has many interesting stories about the little house she raised her half-sister in back in the 90s, but this one has definitely puzzled me. She said it was around the same time she met my dad, and like any other summer night, they usually kept the windows open for air. They had one big window in the living room facing the front yard outside. She said my dad had heard something in the bushes that sit right under the window. They both looked in that direction, but the living room lights are on, so you can't really see the screen. She said it got pretty loud and eventually made out a flapping sound, maybe a bird. But the sound got a lot heavier, like there was something huge trying to fly away. She said they could both hear thick wings like a bat but can't see anything. They're both too scared to turn the light or go outside, but it eventually stopped. Never heard anything like it since. They live slash still live in the Indiana area, so there aren't many huge birds or animals up there that could have made it. A bit specific and eerie to make up, I think, but very weird. Our home sits on the edge of 200 acres of woods with well-established trails running through. I've been exploring back there for 6 years now and know the trails very well. Yesterday, early in the evening, I went back with my dog and headed down with our most well-traveled path. There was absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. I was just watching the deer and eating wild blackberries. This is something I've done before. I come to a familiar clearing where some equipment owned by the gas company is, and I suddenly felt disorientated, almost dizzy. I was just standing there looking around at the clearing and the trails, which look both familiar and strange simultaneously. Then I noticed what appears to be a house down the trail to my left. There shouldn't be any houses there, and I felt scared. But I walked that way anyway, I know not smart. I got down the trail and realized it was my son's elementary school, which does border the woods, but not on the side, and not where I am. I was genuinely scared at this point and kept looking around, wondering what the hell happened. How did I get so disorientated and manage to turn around so quick? I got home fine and nothing else really scary happened, but I just cannot wrap my mind around what happened. In January of 2020, my brother, fiance, kid, and I decide to go backpacking in southern Indiana. We stay at a shelter that is close to the Ohio River. At about 1 p.m., my brother and my kid are asleep, and my fiance and I were out by the fire just talking. My fiance got scared and pointed to multiple lights in the woods. It looked as though there's 5 to 10 people out there with flashlights coming towards us. I go and get my brother up so he can see and get his gun if needed, but before I get him up, one by one, the lights started to disappear. We spoke with him about it the following morning, and he said it was probably just lights from the boats and reflections. Then the next night, we waited for boats to pass by again, and none of them made the same light as the one before. And we knew we saw the lights then, and it seemed too far away from the river to be redirected into the woods or to reflect like that. Then, around 5 or 5:30 in the morning of the third day, while I was laying there in the shelter and everyone else was asleep, I was awoken by the sound of people whispering. Then I saw a shadow or something through the cracks of the shelter. I poked my head around expecting to see someone, but literally no one was there. We've been back to that exact spot multiple times since and haven't experienced anything like it since. I used to live in Wells, Nevada, a tiny town, really. The only thing to do is go backpacking and hunt most of the time. It was usually great, however, one particular trip stands out to me. I was a naught but a wee lad, at the tender age of 14, when my father decides to take me on a trip to Jarbridge. It's an absolutely beautiful area, and the trip is absolutely stunning, with lots of abandoned buildings to check out and things to explore. Tons of stuff to do, anyhow. We drove out and decided to explore this building that obviously has been abandoned long ago. I had a 12 gauge with me, as well as my 44 strapped to my hip, just because I'm from a gun savvy family, I suppose. This is important for the next part. We walk up to the door to the place, but I heard something incredibly odd. It sounded like somebody was sawing on something, like a piece of wood. I tugged at my dad and told him what I heard, but he just shrugs it off. Just after I told him, a voice came from inside telling us to come in. It was obviously from an older gentleman, but nevertheless made us jump. My father is extremely outgoing, however, and decides to go in despite my repeated attempts at doing the exact opposite. So when we went in, the first thing the man says is, "You ain't gonna shoot me with that, are you now, son?" I quickly shook my head no and gave a gentle laugh. I thought he was joking. My father introduces himself and I, as well as my younger brother. The man then introduces himself. He immediately says he's 127 but couldn't have been more than 80, and that he'd been raised around here, which is as follows, and I can remember roughly how the conversation went, saying, "Well, I was born here in this hometown with my siblings, because my father had gone out and froze himself to death in the harsh winters we got around here. It ain't that long after I was born, I followed in his footsteps and tried crawling out into the snow. I about froze to death, but Ma saved me by finding me out there in the snow, dragging me inside, but she froze to death herself doing it. Did you bring any potatoes? I'll tell you, I was in Ireland during the famine. I could really use some potatoes. In fact, my cousin served in World War II but was killed and reincarnated as my brother. Anyway, I used to work down in Las Vegas. I built over 1,000 motels and home. I built this place here too, actually. I also helped build the Notre Dame, as I'm very religious, but god damn it, somebody stole the doors right off the place." Now at this point, as he looked at me and said again, "Are you gonna shoot me, boy?" I said no, and put my gun near the door to put him at ease. At this point, I can see behind him, and I can see a table that's laid out with perfect china and proper silverware for four, the exact number of us there. I returned to my seat, had an incredibly uneasy feeling I've never felt before or since, because it was disturbing. I started telling my dad that we had to go, but before I could finish, we heard the sound of tires coming down the road. The old man leapt to his feet, immediately disturbed. "What? Who? Why is someone here? No one's supposed to be here." He began walking towards the door, which is where I'd set my shotgun down. My dad also jumped up, and we quickly left. I'd never felt so disturbed in my life. We let the other folks who'd pulled up to the property know about it, saying it's really not wise to go in there, and we jumped in the truck and left. When we got home, of course, I told everyone about it. A buddy did a bit of research, and I found out that Prouty's, where a local family came with a long history of having issues, and this person was real, but however, had an obituary from 5 years prior to us meeting him. Now, I don't know if it was the same individual, but my God, was it scary. The weirdest one that I had was while hiking with my brother, and we stumbled upon a grow-up on the side of a hill in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't too far from a small community, but it was a few miles up a steep creek bed. We had taken a rugged logging road to get there, and then hiked along a very rough trail we found. There was probably 50 very healthy marijuana plants there. It was on Crown public land, so we weren't allowed to hike there, but we sure didn't hang around to find out whose it was. Another time, we're hiking to the top of a mountain, looking for interesting rocks. The mountains were known to the local natives as a spiritual site, and there was definitely the sense of otherworldliness in the air. Now, evening was coming, so we were heading back to my car. We found a car in, made of rocks balanced together. As we started to approach it, there was something bright orange in the space formed between the leaning rocks, right in the center of the configuration. It looked like something man-made and was jarringly out of place in this very isolated setting. When we got near it, we realized the bright orange was the last tiny drop of sunlight. Literally, everywhere else is shadowy, that had somehow fallen right into the center of it for us to find out. It was bright orange because it was late summer and there was lots of wildfires in the area. Of course, it was just a coincidence, but it seems like more than that. And this reminds me of another one. We were driving down to a remote mountain road after a day of fishing. It was dark, and suddenly we come across a mysterious cloud of smoke enveloping the road. We couldn't see the source of it, and we were at least 15 miles away from any houses. We stopped the car, and when we walked back up to the road, we could see a bit, and about 50 feet from the road, in a little gully, there's a wildfire burning. It was about 10 feet by 10 feet, and warm enough that we could feel it from the road. The creepy part about that is that when we drove up that road earlier in the day to get to the lake, we noticed a faint smoky smell. It must have been sparked by some lightning there and was slowly growing and absolutely become massive. This was a remote road and we had not found it before. We just know the fire must have got huge, but we did report it. Okay, I've got one for you all. I live in a rural area about 30 minutes of West Palm Spring in Southern California. My cousin and I decide to go hiking some hills that are about 20 minutes north in an area called Oakland. There was no trail to get back into the hills, and we actually had to trespass on a fire camp and follow a stream up towards the hills. We started climbing the hills and reached the peak of a very steep area. I realize we're way away from where the car park is, and I don't even know where the road is. On top of that, all the fog is heavily rolling in now, and we only have about 35 minutes of light remaining. We attempt to take a shortcut down the hill by sliding on our butts down a steep slope. To add dismay, we ended up on the side of a 30-foot rock wall. Long story short, we managed to scale down the rock, but not before a football-sized rock falls on my cousin's head, and he starts bleeding heavily and is disorientated. We start walking the direction that the car's in, with the fog still heavy around us. Now, we're not sure if we're going the right way, and my cousin is bleeding a lot, and suddenly we come across a 40-foot building with thick concrete walls, set mostly below ground like a bunker, in the middle of a forest. Now, the windows had bars on them, and the door is heavy sealed. My cousin wanted to check it out, but we're getting a bad vibe from it. He was saying something was drawing him into it. Now, I don't believe in the supernatural, but I would not let him in. It's a really eerie place. Shortly after, we pass a house, and the fog lifts up a lot, and luckily, we stumble upon a foot trail. A weird note. We hike back there a couple of days later during full daylight and looked for the place, but seriously cannot find it again. We literally hiked there for hours. Now, on a second weird note, my wallet fell out of my back pocket, and when we're sliding down the hill, we ended up getting back far away from Charles, but my ID showed up in the mail a week later in an envelope with no note or shipping address. Doing a group trip in the woods, literally 40 minutes from any town, we ask our group leader if we can go back to our cabin as night rolls around. He says sure, and we begin to walk. We have to walk through a path that's 10 minutes long and in the middle of a thick forest. When we're about halfway to the cabin, I get an uneasy feeling. I turn around, and literally 10 feet behind us is this guy in a yellow poncho following us. I tell my friends, and we all turn around, but none of us recognize him. The guy in the poncho just smiles at us for a second and then runs off the path into the woods. So my friends and I sprint to the cabin and enter. The rest of the group is already there. We tell the group leader about it and he calls the other leaders and they start looking around, but they don't find anything. But a new rule is put into place that requires somebody to be with the leader at all times when you're outside or just go into some of the cabins that are further away. I debated on whether or not to actually share this as it's a super short amount of time and I didn't see anything, but I ultimately decided that maybe I should go for it. My husband, 28, and I, 25, stay in a small town that borders an absolutely massive redwood forest. We're about 15 minutes or less away from the Trees of Mystery. We live on a street that was built in the middle of the forest for whatever reason. Now, there's two large patches, maybe 5 or 15 miles plus, one of which has a small forest bridge that connects to an even larger forest. On either end of our street, I will also say we tend to be night owls, preferring to stay up late and wake up late. So, the setting to what happened. My husband was getting ready for bed while I sat under the covers. It was a nice cool night after a hot day, so I opened the window to just curl up under my blankets for 5 minutes with the wonderful air on my face. While laying on my phone on my side, not fully asleep, I then begin to look up and I can see a full moon. I was surprised to find that the moon was on 100% tonight, so I looked outside my window from my bedside and confirmed the amount of light on the ground outside on our street, which has no street lights since it's an old street. It's very well lit in a bluish tone color. I was kind of like, oh, neat, and went back to my phone. I wait for my husband to get into bed before I start falling asleep. I don't know if it's a comfort thing or not, but I usually can't sleep well unless he's near me. I was wide awake, sitting there for about 5-ish minutes, listening to the crickets outside when I can hear a man scream up my street. It sounded like it was coming 2 or 3 doors down, near to one of the edges of the forest. At first, it was just a fearful scream, but then it moved and continued to almost like a guy doing a fake scream. Why? It's 2 a.m., but the scream goes on for far too long, and then at the tail end of it, it went from kind of like a silly fake one to a deep, gurgling roar, similar to, I don't know, like something transforming in the movies. But at first, it doesn't sound real, almost like something forcing or pretending a scream, then a very deep sound afterwards. I don't recall whether or not the crickets went silent, by the way. I just know that I was no longer trying to listen to them after hearing that noise. I have wondered Sasquatch or maybe werewolf or dogman, some other creepy critter like that, or God knows what. But I know nothing normal or person should be able to scream for that long or that deep. Plus, it echoed and felt like it was reverberating off a speaker in a room, but of course it wasn't. I've gone through every possibility and not really had any explanation as to what this scream was. I am neither of the things in this title, however. I was in a Firewise program with the county. We clearly and thoroughly searched 400 square feet and found somebody's house. Anyway, we were clearing brush around an elderly man's home and he suggested over and over again that this one area is of no threat and we just skip it. Well, we can't just skip it. That'd leave a weak spot, so we have no choice. After getting almost all of it clear, there was a bit of a ladder fuel in one area. We used a bladder weed eater to do this kind of thing. After getting almost the entire area of a 10 or 15 foot square patch cleared, I could not knock down this one patch level to the ground. I've actually dented the blades trying to do this, realizing I was hitting a metal bar, so I dug around it and realized it was a refrigerator buried so deep with only one handle sticking out. After finding this, I alert my coworker. Now, by the way, we never found anything like this. Usually it's just trees and stuff. So he comes up and we play a game. No, you open it game. After about 5 minutes, curiosity gets the better of me and I go for it. But it's jammed, so I started reaming on it and he helps me and kind of screeches a little bit. It smelt like nothing I've ever smelt before. The most horrid stench. We back up like 30 feet and it doesn't help. So I walk up and open it all the way. The smell made my eyes water and regret having a nose. My mouth was open a little bit and I could really taste this stench. I figure, what the hell? The worst already happened. I peek inside and it's an assortment of bones. I can't tell if it's animal or not. There are no horned skulls, if that makes sense. Just random figments like ribs and long bones, like ones in animals' legs, I think. So we mention this to our boss and he says he'll put it in a report. A couple of weeks later it becomes a, I don't know the word, area of interest I guess, and apparently another service has to investigate. However, since this was the very last of the entire area to be cleared, once we had left that day, nobody went back until the crew arrived a month later, only to find a very large hole where the fridge was. The homeowner denies having any clue about it whatsoever. I still don't know what I stumbled upon. So, story time. A couple of years ago, I lived in a house outside of Charlotte that was right next to what us city folk called a greenway. Essentially, it's really an undeveloped land between existing developments that, due to the layout of the infrastructure and topography land, could not be clear-cut and paved enough to make it cost-effective, so they just put up trails and parks and sold it as a natural spot to increase the property values in the area. Well, my girlfriend at the time had a daughter, and the daughter's school was on this one-way end of the greenway, and we live on the other. It actually took less time to walk there than to drive, so on nice days, I'd grab the stroller, carry it to her school, and pick her up at the end of the day, and then we'd have a really nice walk through the woods. Well, this particular greenway waved through some areas that were pretty close to rather busy roads, so it wasn't unusual to hear road noises like big trucks or motorcycles or whatever. Turns out that coyotes in this area responded to things like fire engines, sirens, much in the way that they did in any other situation. Long story short, I have my girlfriend's kid in the middle of the woods and we hear a fire engine. And as the sound dies from there, we hear dozens of coyotes responding in kind. Now they completely surround us. Normally I wouldn't be very afraid. It's very unusual even for a pack of coyotes to attack humans. However, I remember the uncomfortable truth that sometimes they do, and can actually attack dogs and, you know, eat and kill them once they've surrounded them. So, parent mode kicks in. While trying to maintain calmness as to not freak out the kid, I pick her up and carry her in one arm and the stroller in the other. I ran as fast as I could the remaining distance, I don't know, maybe half a mile or so. This took me maybe all of 5 minutes, but it was honestly the scariest thing of my life. So a girlfriend and I took a 2-week road trip last year and backwards camped slash hiked the whole time. As some insight, I'm also a girl, so there's 2 20-something-year-olds out on the road. We got to one free campsite in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico, and we're the only people out here. Not unusual, so we just take up the first spot and set up. As we make dinner, a couple pulls in, drives by and heads to the back of the campgrounds. We don't really know how far back they went. About 20 minutes later, they come by and flag me down. Girl, have you been back there? Me, no. Girl, it's a massacre back there. What do you mean? There's bones everywhere. Mind if we take the spot next to you? No, not at all. Then maybe 2 minutes later, look around, get back into the car and leave. I say, what's all that about? I explain to my friend what the girl said. And at that moment, we look down and see a huge femur bone at our feet, possibly from a cow. Well, us being a little cryptic, decide to go and check out what they're talking about. About 100 yards back, through the windy camp, and there it is. There's full-blown animal carcasses everywhere, some scattered and some still whole. And there's one pile of what appears to be fox fur, another deer body in a trash bag. Our theory is that's where they dump all the roadkill, which they scrape up off the highway. But we didn't figure this out for a few days. Nonetheless, if there's that many bodies there, it's weird where they come from, because there must be a massive predator that we don't know about. So we decided to pack up and find a different camp. For campsite 2 of the night, we're about an hour or so drive, still in the middle of nowhere. Haven't seen a single car this time, no houses, just old country roads and pastures. Mind you, the sun is setting. The road turns to dirt for a bit. We cross a cattle guard and see the national park sign. Sweet, it's a national park and it's free. It can't be too bad. My friend thinks it looks a little sketchy, but we're ready to relax and grab some food. So I hit a left and start up the hill to the national park. Looks like it's only about 2 miles from the map. We start going up this road, go around a few curves, and on the side, we realize that the brush is getting thicker and thicker, and the road starts getting rough. Now, to put this into perspective, we're in a fairly new Chevy, manual transmission. It's less than a foot clearance from the ground. About a quarter of a mile in, we high center on a massive rock. Okay. As long as this doesn't get any worse, I think we can manage. There's no possible way to turn around or get back, so we have to keep going. Of course, it got worse. Every rock and trench, we hear the car scrape and shudder and stall. I'm clenching the wheel, she is clenching the handle. All the brush on the side of us is now dead and eerie looking, and the sun is almost gone behind us. 30 terrifying minutes later, we finally make it to the top flat that's supposed to be a campsite. It's about 10 square foot clearing in the middle of the dead brush, and in front of us a cliff. We're still freaking out about the dead animals, but now we feel like we're in the middle of a low budget horror film, and we need to get out of there. Now, we decide we cannot in our right mind stay here. Even from the cliff top, we can't see a single house or car light. We decide to make a 10-point turn between the brush and the boulder and the cliff. Manage to get back on the path and very slowly and carefully, terrified all the way, get back down the damn hill. We in the car manage to miraculously survive and head out after 2 hours back to the closest town and sleep in a Walmart parking lot. I was backpacking in the Beartooth Wilderness in the early 2000s with a good friend of mine. 3 days into the hike, we had only seen one other couple. On the third night, at about 4 a.m., we're woken to our tents, in which sounds like the scream of a massive animal. Obviously, we're freaked out, sitting in the tent, not knowing what was out there. We started hearing what sounded like howl for about 15 minutes, followed by heavy footsteps near our camp. My friend and I started yelling, making tons of noise, a trick that tends to fend off bears. The commotion outside of the tent comes to a halt slowly. The following morning, after not sleeping at all, we unzip the tent to the creepiest scene. All around the tent are pebbles. The howl was literally thousands of pebbles that had been thrown across. Now, they surround the tent in a nearly perfect circle of 20 or so boulders. I mean, these must be 150 or 300 pounds. My friend and I noped out of there, making a 3-day hike in one, practically running the whole way to the car. I've been in two bad car accidents. I know the rush of adrenaline going through your head when you're in a crash. For that reason, I pull over at any crash I see to help out, unless emergency services are already there. I have a level head, basic medical training, and usually a first aid kit on me. Normally, everything is fine, and I leave once EMS/police show up. Today, that totally changed. I came around a bend and saw a pickup that had hit a tree. A body was slumped over in the seat. I immediately pulled my bike into subdivision right across the street and ran over. Quickly grabbing my bag, taking off my jacket and helmet, I see a white man in his late 20s with a slim frame slumped over in the seat. Confused, I'm not sure what his situation is. I can see that there's saliva dropping down the side of his face. My brain instantly went to seizure. The car who's been a little behind me also pulled over. The driver's calling 911 right next to me. He tapped on the window a bit, and there was no response. I jumped into the bed to see if the back window was. None of them were there. I hopped out and went to see if anything has changed. The driver's no longer convulsing, but he was still non-responsive. I knock on the window to see if he had come out of it. The driver jumped up and began panicking. This is pretty common for someone who's had a seizure, especially if they've had a traumatic experience on top of it. He began yelling and lightly punching the window. This happened for a span of around a second, which meant I jumped 20 feet in the air. Once my brain cleared for a second, I loudly say, "Are you alright?" if he could unlock the door. Luckily for me, he didn't understand a word I said. He slumped back over, which prompts me to knock again. He then jumps back up and promptly begins freaking out once again. After a quick moment, he calms down again and sat there smiling. It wasn't a normal smile. It was sort of haunting. His tongue was hanging out, very yellowed. The man who pulled over with me, Mark, came around, which brought another round of freaking out. This began the pattern of any new stimuli causing him to freak out. A third person pulled over and came to check in. He quickly came to the same conclusion: drugs. Our driver was now in a relaxed state until the sirens started. Me and a third person began directing traffic while Mark kept an eye on the driver, relaying everything to 911. I had to move my jacket, helmet, and bag over near my bike, just in case he started driving again. About a minute after we heard the first sirens, the fire truck, ambulance, and sheriff pulled up. The fire truck blocked traffic from one end, and after briefly talking to the cop, Mark went to start turning cars around from the other direction. A cop pulled up from the end blocked by the fire truck. The two cops, after determining that the driver was combative, drew their tasers. A firefighter used a pick to break open the driver's side window. After the first hit, the driver began to claw at the back window. Once it had been pulled out, The cops began yelling at him to open the door. Par for the course. The driver doesn't get a word. They decide to smash the front window. After the first hit, they didn't have to do much, as the driver began hitting back. He punched the window out entirely. The cops yelled some more. The driver's still yelling and punching. The first cop tased him. If we didn't hear the crackling, we wouldn't have known he was tased. He's still punching. Second cop tases him. Still nothing. First cop again. Second cop. And the first cop tased again. And the second cop opens the door. The driver begins kicking and punching while getting dragged out of the car. The cops attempt to hold him down. The largest of the firefighters jumps on him, and now there's six cars flying up the road towards us. They all ran over to assist. Now, eventually, me and Mark had to stick around to be interviewed by the highway officer. This experience really made me scared of people and drugs, as I wasn't already. It really turns them into some kind of monster out of a film. Almost unstoppable. This happened only a couple of months ago, so I'm still quite on the edge. I had a group of friends that lived about an hour and a half away from me, and I'd frequently go hang out with them. The drive never bothered me, but this particular night I dreaded it. I first noticed a car about 20 minutes into my trip home. It was about 2 a.m., so not many cars are on the road. Now, this guy was practically hitting my bumper the whole way, which is strange because there's no other cars there. I quickly wrote it off and turned on my music. The time on the freeway is about an hour, and he was behind me the entirety of it. When I saw he was getting off the same exit, I began getting nervous. I told myself I was just being paranoid. I was heading home as I normally would until I noticed this car making every turn behind me. I start turning down random roads, testing my theory, and he's trailing me the whole time. I stop going towards my home and start driving random, trying to think of what to do. I tried whipping down roads at this last second, but it didn't work. I was driving through red lights and stop signs because I was so scared of what might happen if I stopped. By this point, I was desperate. I decided to call the police, telling them that I'd been followed for over an hour. I gave them a description of the car and my location. The dispatcher told me to drive to the police station, and there's going to be officers waiting in the parking lot. As soon as I turned to the parking lot, the driver sped off. One of the police cruisers immediately flips their lights on and follow them. I give my statement, but never hear anything back. This happened just a few days ago, while I was walking home from work. I should explain, I live in a small rural community. It's a very safe, rather quiet town. I walk to and from work every day. I carry both a box cutter and pepper spray at all times. I feel rather comfortable walking at night and actually find it calming. It was about 10:15 on this particular night when my journey began. I had a very uneasy feeling that I couldn't place. I decided to call my boyfriend. I knew he couldn't do much since he's at least 3 hours away, but at least he could call the police if something happened. We talked and laughed as long as I walked. Everything was fine. That was until I passed the Goodwill parking lot, which is a halfway point. I looked over and saw a man sitting in his truck staring at me. I didn't think much of it, People can be odd, and perhaps he was simply dozing. As I passed the parking lot, I heard the truck start up behind me and felt a little uneasy. We just kept walking, thinking I'm being paranoid. I should also note that there's a young man walking 300 feet in front of me. He kept stopping in the middle of the sidewalk. Because of this, I walked slower than I would normally. I didn't want to catch up with him. Eventually, he crossed the street and I began to pick up the pace. As I was about to reach the entrance to my neighborhood, the truck from before flew around the corner, stopping 500 feet in front of me. He turned his truck so it's blocking the road. I'm now freaking out. I tell my boyfriend what's happening. He says, "Don't worry, everything will be okay." I continue walking and watch as this man got out of his truck, standing in front of it, staring directly at me. I put my head down, tightly grasping my box cutter. I got closer and closer to the man, my breathing getting heavier and heavier. I could tell he was at least 6 feet tall. And the streetlight shone down on him. I can see his arms bulge. I'm only 5 foot. Now I'm pretty small too. Suddenly, though, a car came from down the street, maneuvering around the truck. About 30 seconds later, a car followed suit, then a third. When the fourth car passed, I saw the man smack his fist in frustration. He clumsily climbs back inside, took a sharp U-turn before tearing out of the neighborhood. If those cars had not come by, I honestly don't know what would have happened to me. Let me start by saying that I really enjoy driving, and I'll often be on the road for hours just listening to music. Getting lost. So, more often than not, I sleep in my car on the side of a country road. I don't like it when I'm the passenger, though. I always go alone. Usually, I sleep for a bit, wake up, then go home without incident. There's been a couple of times when a deer has startled me, or even a person knocking on my window. To make sure I was okay. Always met with a scream. But what happened last night absolutely takes the cake. I took my dogs up to a really nice walk that I've read about online. I was about an hour drive, and I planned to drive for an hour at a time, explore a bit, then keep going so the dogs didn't get restless or bored. I'd always taken plenty of food and water and was planning to be gone before about a day, which I was going to a park in a popular parking spot that caravanners like to go overnight. It was lovely. I had myself and my dog. We had a really good time. We arrived at a sleeping destination and found that there wasn't any place that we could actually park. The bays weren't laid out, so you had to use common sense to find a spot, so you're not blocking anyone in. The parking area was free and could only contain about 10 caravans without being too tight. I was a little annoyed, but hey, we're in a very rural area here, so it kind of makes sense. I let the dogs out to do their business and went to sleep, thinking nothing of it. To describe where I parked, it was opposite a little cottage, but not directly in front of it. There's plenty of trees there, and I don't feel nervous or anything. I know I'm not intruding on the owners in any way. I feel safe. For some reason, though, I was having trouble nodding off. Usually I sleep like a baby in my car, but it's very spacious and comfortable. As silly as it may sound, to some, I genuinely thought I had nothing to worry about. That was until a long, high-pitched screaming sound woke me up, and the dogs at around 11 p.m. The dogs go nuts, as they usually do at the drop of a hat. I was still in a confused daze when I see a very tall man dragging what I think is a key around the perimeter of my car. He goes very slowly, not taking his eyes off me the entire time. He has a very malicious grin on his face all the while he's doing so. Horrified, I crank up my chair and start the car, ready to floor it, but he had made his way to the front of my bonnet, blocking me from reversing. This is when I thought that he was holding a butcher's knife. He held it up and waved it at me. I scream and lay on the horn. My dogs had leapt over the back seat and were practically frothing at the mouth, but it didn't faze him. This lasted about 10 to 15 seconds, not long. He then slowly walked away across the road into the cottage. I drove home without stopping. I'm never, never doing that again. Thanks for ruining it for me, terrifying guy. Thanks for ruining the paintwork. And thank God for cars being able to be locked. This happened my senior high school year. I was driving home alone from a movie with my friend on a Saturday night. After about the first 5 minutes, it became the same route I drove to school every day, so I was kind of on autopilot. I never text and drive and rarely speed, and definitely was not speeding because I have my junior license. I was pulling up to a light that had just turned green in enough time that I did not have to slow down. I went through the light, then I just remembered the most force I've ever felt in my life. I opened my eyes when I heard a man banging on my window, yelling in, asking if I could get out or needed help breaking the window. I was able to get my seatbelt off. I managed to unlock it. I then went to look for my phone and the man said, "Forget the phone. I've already called the police. Please sit down on that hill far away. It's smoking and I want to make sure there's no fire." So I sit where he tells me after he says, "Am I okay?" My hand had glass in it as well as my face. Nothing life-threatening though, so I just sat there until the ambulance arrives. Right as I get on the hill, I heard the man who was yelling, saying, "Hey, what the hell do you think you're doing?" and just took off in full sprint down the road. I was so confused. Why was this man who was just helping me chasing this poor 50-ish-year-old woman down the road? I realized it was a woman who hit me because she was nowhere to be seen initially. After we got her out of the car, she was trying to flee the scene. The man successfully got her and brought her back to the scene. The cops arrive and go back to her immediately and breathalyze her. He then gives his statement. All while this was happening, there's this boy outside of his house who come and brought me a bag of M&Ms and says, "Wow, you spun so much. Does it hurt?" I had no idea my car had spun. All of a sudden, I hear lots of swearing, saying, "You think this is on me? No, you hit me." The poor boy is standing next to me. I told him to go back to his mum. I'm thankful he did. Definitely not the same for an 8-year-old. The woman screaming and swearing. She then tried to come towards me and one of the officers, but gets held back. At this point, they said she blew a .23 and they put her into handcuffs. I had yet to give a statement to the cops and I thought, what am I supposed to say? Then I realized in the midst of all this, I forget to even call my parents. My mum was across the country for work, so I called my dad. My dad was at a concert 3 hours away, so he called my neighbour. My neighbour, who's one of our best family friends, calls me and says, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Don't say anything to the cops until you tell me the story first. I then tell him that I'm nervous because I was the one to T-bone her. He said, just tell me what happened. And I said, I went through 100% green light and the lady went through the red hitting me and she blew a .23. He lost it. He went over and said, you almost just killed an 18-year-old because you got behind a wheel after drinking. How stupid are you to be doing this? And she said, well, I wish I'd actually killed her, and started swearing again. She went on to scream the entire time we're there, just, you know, saying I was awful and that she wished she'd killed me. Finally, the cops take her away. My car was completely done. It was a Volvo, and the cops said, they've seen this car do really well in different accidents, and it probably helped save me. I thought I was going to have to see her in court, but she didn't even show up. I hope to never see her again. I wish I got the name or number of the man who helped me. He just disappeared after giving his statement. A real hero. I really don't know what would have happened if he wasn't there and I was left with that crazy lady.